Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, August 5th, 2019. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Department of Energy wants to build first new test reactor in years in either Idaho or Tennessee. ICE sending separated children of asylum seekers across the country to detention facilities in Oregon and Washington. Moscow City Council to hold public hearing and is expected to vote on fiscal year 2020 budget tonight. And Pullman School District installs new security measures at elementary schools. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Department of Energy announced today it wants to build a new test reactor in either Idaho or Tennessee in an effort to restart the nation's nuclear power industry. The agency said it will take public comments on an environmental review through Wednesday, September 4th, and then produce an environmental impact statement for the test reactor that would be built by the end of 2025. The reactor would be called the Versatile Test Reactor and would be the first dedicated to fast neutron spectrum testing capability. It would also be the first new test reactor in the U.S. in decades. Federal officials shut down the last test reactor in Idaho, the Experimental Breeder Reactor 2, in 1994. U.S. Energy Secretary Rick Perry said in a statement, "This testing capability is essential for the United States to modernize its nuclear energy infrastructure and for developing transformational nuclear energy technologies that reduce waste generation and enhance nuclear security." Union of Concerned Scientists Nuclear Safety Project Acting Director and Senior Scientist Edwin Lyman told the Associated Press he knows the test reactor will be cooled with liquid sodium and fueled with plutonium, which would increase the risk of nuclear terrorism because plutonium can be used in nuclear weapons. Most nuclear reactors online today are cooled with easier-to-control water and fueled with uranium. Lyman said, "There is nothing good about these reactors. I think there is a love of plutonium in the department that is irrational." Energy Department officials say one of the objectives of the new test reactor program is to reduce spent nuclear fuel, but Lyman said the fast reactors would produce even more hazardous waste. Superior Court Administrator Chad Connors in Western Washington says Immigration and Customs Enforcement has sent 30 youths to the Cowlitz County Youth Services Center in Longview since 2013, and five of those children were in custody at the center as of late July. Northern Oregon Regional Corrections Facility's detention manager, Jeff Justison in the Dalles, says immigration officials have sent 16 kids to his facility. Justison said there were two at the facility called NorCor as of late July. ICE said in a statement it has to jail the kids because they have, quote, serious criminal histories. The agency wrote, "It would be irresponsible and potentially dangerous for the agency to allow these individuals to remain out of custody without a guardian." Immigrant advocates and attorneys say many of the kids have been shipped to the Oregon and Washington facilities from the East Coast. Portland attorney Mary Ruth Petzing, who has represented teenage ICE detainees at NorCor, told the Seattle Times, "There's effectively no oversight." University of Washington Center for Human Rights Director Angelina Snodgrass Godoy has filed public records requests in Washington and Oregon to find out more about the children. Godoy said last year ICE revealed at her request the kids are held between 11 hours and 10 months, but would not release records about their criminal histories, even if those records would redact personal information. That led her to suspect they may not be as dangerous as ICE would lead people to believe. Although the Idaho Freedom Foundation is complaining about state spending for diversity programs at Boise State University and raising money for itself to organize against what it calls BSU's radical agenda, most of the programs it has complained about are funded by sources outside the university and the state education budget. Boise State University committed $30,000 to multicultural student events at the Boise campus last year, such as powwow, rainbow graduation, and black graduation. That money, though, came from corporate sponsorship fees from Coca-Cola. The Idaho Press reports Boise State University spokesperson Greg Hahn said as part of a contract that makes Coca-Cola products the standard on campus and disallows Pepsi and other Coca-Cola competitors for most university-sanctioned concessions, the Coca-Cola company pays annual sponsorship fees to Student Affairs. Idaho Freedom Foundation Vice President Fred Burnham forwarded a June 4th newsletter from then-interim BSU President Martin Schimpf to lawmakers on education and budget committees, which highlighted a number of programs at the school to increase diversity in recruiting and honor minority graduates. Republican Representative Barbara Ehart of Idaho Falls then authored a letter signed by 29 House Republicans to new Boise State University President Marlene Trump less than 2 weeks after she took office, saying, quote, "We need to do things the Idaho way." The letter listed various BSU diversity initiatives and suggested the university change course. The letter claimed the programs are a reason for rising education and tuition costs. Interim President Schimpf and the Republican response letter to Trump complained about taxpayers funding sexual misconduct prevention and response programming for LGBTQIA plus students, but the money would come from a U.S. Justice Department grant. The Justice Department is now in the process of reviewing Boise State University's grant application for the program. The July 12th letter from Republicans was immediately followed by a letter to new BSU President Trump signed by all Idaho House and Senate Democrats, which said Idaho's higher education institutions create welcoming environments to serve students from diverse backgrounds who are striving for a better way of life and more opportunity. This is the Idaho way. The Idaho Freedom Foundation has been using their distaste for Boise State University diversity initiatives in its fundraising emails, claiming BSU has segregated graduation ceremonies, but not mentioning the university also has all school commencement ceremonies every year at Taco Bell Arena. This year, there were so many graduates that the university held two ceremonies on the same day, but students were divided by college. Other campus groups, including campus departments, faith groups, and student groups, hold their own commencement ceremonies before and after the main ceremony. BSU also has black graduation, rainbow graduation, international graduation, and first forward graduation, where the first in a family to graduate from college is honored. The fundraising email, signed by Idaho Freedom Foundation President Wayne Hoffman, says, quote, "You can strike back against BSU's radical agenda by donating money to the group." The Moscow City Council will hold a public hearing on the proposed $101.5 million fiscal year 2020 budget at tonight's City Council meeting. The budget won't include over $15,000 the police department initially proposed for a drug-sniffing dog because Police Chief James Fry and city officials decided pushback from the public on the issue at tonight's public budget hearing would be distracting. The budget does contain a 25% increase in property taxes, mostly to pay for the $10 million 30-year general obligation bond approved by voters in May. $7.8 million of the bond is for the new police station to be built on the south end of the city on Southview Drive. The city property tax rate would increase from $4.49 per $1,000 assessed value to $5.63 per $1,000 assessed value. However, taxes on owner-occupied homes receive a tax exemption of 50% of the home's value up to $100,000. With that factored in, those who live in $200,000 homes would pay $560 in city taxes for the next fiscal year, an increase of $110 from the current fiscal year. The city's base property tax rate will also increase 7%, even though state law limits increases to 3.5% per year. The larger tax base rate increase is allowed because the city did not increase its property tax rate by the full 3.5% allowed in previous years. The fiscal year 2020 budget will go into effect October 1st. The City Council will also hold a separate public hearing tonight on proposed city fee increases for the next fiscal year. Idaho code requires cities to hold public hearings anytime fees are increased by 5% in a year or on any new fees. The proposed fee increases for next fiscal year are generally smaller than 5%. For example, a number of fees for building inspections went from $63.50 to $66, and the conditional use permit fee would go from $475 to $500. Monthly sewer and water services rates would also go up by about 4%. The council will also be asked tonight to formally approve the $10 million bond ordinance based on voter approval in May. The City Council will also be asked to approve a request from Palouse Ice Rink Incorporated to extend their $1 million commitment of City Hamilton Recreation Funds for the rink due to delays in building the rink. The Council will also hear a Citizen Commission report on the City's Sustainable Environment Commission from Commission Chair Steve McGeehan. Tonight's Moscow City Council meeting will begin at 7 p.m. at City Hall.
Critics of Idaho legislators' bid to restrict the citizen initiative process continue their tour across the state. Reclaim Idaho has hosted three events in Boise, Sandpoint, and most recently Coeur d'Alene on its Idaho Speaks Town Hall series. This past session saw the passage of a bill, eventually vetoed by Governor Brad Little, that would have increased the number of required signatures to get an initiative on the ballot, while cutting the time frame to collect them from 18 months to 6. Retired Idaho Supreme Court Chief Justice Jim Jones is on the tour and opposes attempts to change the process, saying under that bill, four legislative districts could have vetoed any initiative.
That's completely unreasonable. Under our Constitution, the people are the source of government power. They have the constitutional right to amend, revoke, or change government at any time. How can they do it if all roads to power lead through the legislature?
Jones calls these attempts a power play by the legislature to make the initiative process unworkable. At the Coeur d'Alene event, State Senator Mary Sousa defended the changes, saying the legislative process provides a more in-depth vetting of legislation than the ballot initiative. Other legislators have worried initiatives could be overused. The next Idaho Speak stop is in Twin Falls on Wednesday. The executive director of Reclaim Idaho, Rebecca Schroeder, notes the discussion about this process comes on the heels of voters approving Medicaid expansion by a wide margin. She expects legislators are not done with their attempts to hamstring initiatives, and her group is gearing up for the 2020 session.
We feel that the biggest risk we run is letting this issue kind of fall out of the public discourse. We can't let folks forget about what happened. We need to be prepared when this comes around again.
The Twin Falls Town Hall is at 6:30 p.m. at the College of Southern Idaho. The series then heads to Idaho Falls on August 13th and Eagle on August 15th. Reclaim Idaho also is doing door knocking on this issue tonight in Twin Falls and on Saturday in Eagle. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegadoff.
And you're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman. Pullman School District Operations Director Joe Thornton said there will be enhanced safety measures at the district's elementary schools starting with this fall semester. Thornton said workers installed electronic door locks at Jefferson, Franklin, and Sunnyside elementary schools this summer. They also installed electronic door locks, a voice-activated system for addressing visitors at entry points, and new surveillance cameras. Thornton said once classes begin each day, all exterior doors will be locked except for the main entrance, where visitors will enter a foyer with a second set of doors, which would be locked. Visitors seeking to enter the school would first speak to a receptionist who would allow them to enter once the receptionist has identified them. Thornton said the improvements are part of a national movement to make schools safer from unwanted visitors and violence. Thornton said the upgrades make sense, especially for older schools, which were built when security issues from gun violence were not as commonplace as they are now. Thornton told the Daily News the improvements for all three elementary schools will cost the district just under $40,000, which will come out of the school district's maintenance and operations budget. Thornton said, "The reality is probably 95% of the people coming to the door, our office staff are going to know. But if we don't know who they are, there can be some communication, and then we know who's coming in the building. When it's somebody we don't know, we can meet them there at the door. We can escort them into the office." Thornton said workers retrofitted some of the schools with additional surveillance cameras for monitoring rear entrances and certain hallways. He said, "We certainly don't have the staff that can be sitting there monitoring those cameras during the school day. It's more to have documentation to go back to maybe see what might have happened. And studies indicate when people know there are cameras in public places, their behavior changes." Sunnyside Elementary School Principal Pam Brantner said the security cameras and improvements are welcome, but are not meant as a deterrent for visitors. Brantner said, "I think it's a positive change, and my hope is that parents don't see it as we don't want people to come to our schools, because we sure do. We want parents that volunteer all the time, and we want to see their smiling faces come through the door. We're just making sure that we're keeping their little tiny kids' smiling faces safe." A 31-year-old transient pleaded guilty Friday in Whitman County District Court to the killing of 55-year-old Kenneth L. Allen of Coeur d'Alene last September. Court records say police arrested Ashley Myers, whose last address was in Kirkland, on suspicion of murder September 28th after someone phoned in a report of an agitated woman waving a gun at a car on the Colfax Airport Road. Police said they found Myers at the side of the road carrying a baseball bat and found Allen dead in a vehicle nearby. They also said they found a loaded handgun and a substantial amount of methamphetamine inside the car. Whitman County Sheriff's Department Sergeant Michael Jordan said in a probable cause affidavit, Myers told him she was Satan. Research scientists at the University of Oregon say the state is lagging behind other states in disaster preparedness. Seismologist and earth sciences professor at the University of Oregon, Douglas Toomey, said Oregon is, quote, woefully underprepared for a large-scale disaster. Toomey helps operate the state's early warning systems for earthquakes. He said, "We don't know when the next big earthquake or wildfire will strike, but we know it will happen at some point." Toomey said disaster preparedness has been and continues to be a focal point for most western states, including Oregon, which is preparing for the hottest and driest months of this year's fire season. He said two large earthquakes in remote regions of Southern California are a reminder it is only a matter of time before the next big earthquake strikes. According to the Associated Press, Oregon Governor Kate Brown said the legislature's decision to not expand the Shake Alert and Alert Wildfire programs, the state's early warning systems, was the quote, biggest disappointment, unquote, of this year's recently concluded legislative session. According to Oregon Senator Elizabeth Steiner, the two alert systems were not funded this year because investments are prioritized, quote, within the limited resources available, unquote. Toomey said he's puzzled by the lack of concern over the safety of residents. He said the money would have created jobs, attracted federal matching funds, and possibly would have saved lives. He said, it feels like the state is demoting public safety. There are lives at stake here. Bonner County Sheriff Darrell Wheeler said police arrested 57-year-old Judith Marie Carpenter of Coeur d'Alene in connection with the 2017 death of a Trestle Creek woman. According to the Bonner County Daily Bee, Wheeler said prosecutors charged Carpenter with first-degree murder. He's now in the Bonner County Jail. According to court documents, Carpenter appeared before a magistrate court judge in a video hearing Friday. The criminal complaint alleges Carpenter shot and killed 73-year-old retired Hope, Idaho clerk Shirley Ramsey at Ramsey's Trestle Creek home near Sandpoint on April 5th, 2017 during a burglary attempt. Wheeler said investigators ran a weapons check against a national database which revealed the handgun used in the killing was owned by Carpenter. The Washington State Patrol reported two motorcycle riders died from a head-on collision on U.S. Highway 101 near Brennan, Washington. According to the Tacoma News Tribune, the collision took place about noon on Saturday. Investigators say 71-year-old Charles Manley of Olympia failed to negotiate a curve on Highway 101 and crossed the center line and collided with another motorcycle driven by 65-year-old Gary K. Francis of Puyallup in the southbound lane of the highway. Both men were ejected from their motorcycles. Emergency responders tried to resuscitate the men and pronounced them dead at the scene. Police closed Highway 101 for more than 4 hours. The crash scene is on the Hood Canal between Duckabush and Triton Cove State Parks. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. There is a heat advisory that will be in effect from noon tomorrow until 8 p.m. on Wednesday for central and eastern Washington and northern and north central Idaho. Highs will be in the mid-90s to up to 105 degrees and lows in the low 60s. Heat-related illness will be possible, especially for those who are heat-sensitive and those without effective cooling or adequate hydration. A heat advisory means a period of hot temperatures is expected. The combination of hot temperatures and high humidity will combine to create a situation in which heat illnesses are possible. People should drink plenty of fluid, stay in air-conditioned rooms, and stay out of the sun and check up on relatives and neighbors. People should take extra precautions if they work or spend time outside. When possible, reschedule strenuous activities for early morning or evening. People should know the signs and symptoms of heat exhaustion and heat stroke and wear lightweight or loose-fitting clothing when possible and drink plenty of water. To reduce risk during outdoor work, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration recommends scheduling frequent rest breaks in shaded areas or air-conditioned environments. Anyone overcome by heat should be moved to a cool and shaded location. Heat stroke is an emergency. People should call 911. The hottest temperatures of the year this far are expected across the region tomorrow and into Wednesday. High temperatures in the mid-90s to 105 will be possible, with the hottest temperatures in the Columbia River Basin and the Lewis-Clark Valley. Forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, calling for mostly clear tonight, low 57, widespread haze and patchy smoke in the afternoon tomorrow, otherwise sunny, high 95, partly cloudy, low 60 Tuesday night, mostly sunny Wednesday, high 95, and partly cloudy Wednesday night and Thursday, low 60, high 90, currently 91 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, and the public affairs shows, plus music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Coming up next, Eat the Airwaves Part 2. Weekly show from the West Side, and that'll be followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. And coming up at 7:30, live in the studio, Disability Talk Northwest with talk and music about disabilities. And at 9 o'clock, Phobic Friends is on the air. At 11 p.m., we will have Intercepted with Jeremy Scahill. So stay tuned. KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is sponsored in part by Palouse Ocularium, creating fine eyewear for your lifestyle through eye exams, unique glasses, and contact lenses. Find Palouse Ocularium at 7th and Washington in Moscow, 208-883-3937 and PalouseOcularium.com. KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including peace and environmentalism.